Odoman rode close behind Trier, holding him on a long rope like a hunting dog on a leash. They all knew that if Trier left them, perhaps slipping away into the night, none of them was likely to find his way out of this wilderness and back to the distant colony. After the treatment he had received from Kurtz, this eventuality was more than just a possibility, so they took turns to guard Trier, keeping him on the rope night and day. They crossed another small clear stream and turned a corner in the valley between two tall pinnacles of stone. An extraordinary vista opened before them. Their senses had become dulled by the wild grandeur of these mountains, but now they reined in their horses and stared in astonishment. Trier began to sing a plaintive, repetitive chant, shuffling and dancing as he looked up at the sacred cliffs that rose in front of them. Even Kurtz was awed. The riven walls of rock seemed to reach to the very sky, and the clouds rolled over the summit like spilled milk. Suddenly, Trier leapt high in the air and uttered a dreadful shriek, which startled Kurtz and raised the fine hair on his forearms. Trier's cry was picked up in the great basin of stone and flung back in a glissando of descending echoes.
"Hear the voices of my ancestors, answer me!" Trier cried, and jumped again. "O holy ones, O wise ones, give me leave to enter!" "Enter! Enter!" the echoes answered him, and still dancing and singing, Trier led them up the scree to the foot of the cliffs.
The walls of lichen-covered stone seemed to hang over them, and the clouds flying over the tops gave the illusion that the cliff was toppling down on them. The wind thrummed through the turrets and towers of stone like the voices of the long dead, and the troopers were silent, their horses fidgeting nervously. Halfway up the scree, a massive boulder blocked their way. In ancient time it had fallen out of the cliff face and tumbled down to this resting place. It was the size of a cottage, and so almost perfectly rectangular that it might have been shaped by human hand. Kurtz saw that in the near side of the block there was a small natural shrine. A strange collection of objects was laid in the niche, horns of bluebuck and rebuck, so old that they were encrusted with the cocoons of the bacon beetle, the skull of a baboon and the wings of a heron, dry and brittle with age, a calabash half filled with pretty agate and quartz pebbles, water-worn and polished, a necklace of beads chipped from ostrich egg, flint arrowheads, and a quiver that was rotted and cracked.
"We must leave gifts here for the old people," Trier said, and Hoffel translated.
Kurtz looked uncomfortable.
"What gifts?" he asked. "Something to eat or drink, and something pretty," Trier told him. "Your little shiny bottle."
"No," Kurtz said, but without conviction. He'd been saving the last few inches of Holland's gin in his silver flask, rationing himself to an occasional sip.
"The old people will be angry," Trier warned. "They will conceal the sign from us."
Kurtz wavered, then reluctantly unfastened the flap of his saddlebag and brought out the silver flask. Trier reached up for it, but Kurtz kept his grip.
"If you fail me again, I will have no further use for you, except to fatten the jackals."
He gave up the flask. Chanting softly, Trier approached the shrine and poured a few drops of the gin down the face of the rock. Then he picked up a fist-sized stone and battered the metal flask. Kurtz winced, but kept silent. Trier placed the flask with the other offerings in the niche, then backed away, still singing softly.
"Now what do we do?"
Kurtz demanded. This place made him nervous. He wanted to be gone.
"What about the spoor?" "If the old people are pleased with your gift, they will reveal it to us. We must go on into the sacred places," Trier told him. "First you must take this rope from my neck, or the old people will be angered that you treat one of their own tribe in this manner."
Kurtz looked doubtful, but Trier's plea made good sense. He reached a decision. He drew his musket from its sheath and cocked the hammer.
"Tell him that he must stay close. If he tries to run, I will ride him down and shoot him like a rabid dog. This gun is loaded with goose shot, and he has seen me shoot. He knows I don't miss," he ordered Hoffel,
and waited while he translated for the little bushman.
"Turn him loose," he nodded to Odoman.
Trier made no attempt to escape, and they followed him up to the base of the cliff. Abruptly, Trier vanished, as though by the magic of his forefathers. With a shout of anger, Kurtz spurred his horse forward, his musket at the ready. Suddenly he reined in and stared with amazement into the narrow gateway in the rock that opened in front of him. Trier had disappeared into the dim depths of the passage. Kurtz hesitated to follow him in there. He could see that once he was inside it, the passage was too narrow for him to turn his horse. The other troopers hung back behind him. "Hoffel!" Kurtz shouted. "Go in there and pull the little bastard out." Hoffel looked behind him, back down the slope, but Kurtz turned the cocked musket on him. "If I can't have Trier, then, by God, you will have to do." At that moment they heard Trier's voice issue from the mouth of the passage, and he was singing. "What is he saying?" Kurtz demanded, and Hoffel looked mightily relieved. "It is his song of victory. He is thanking his gods for their kindness in revealing the spoor to him." Kurtz's misgivings evaporated. He swung down from the saddle and strode into the passage. He found Trier around the first bend, singing, clapping, and giggling with triumph. "What have you found?"
"Look under your feet, you white baboon," Trier told him,
making sure he would not understand the insult, but pointing at the trampled white sand. Kurtz understood the gesture, but still he was uncertain. Any definition of the spoor was long ago obliterated. It was merely a dimpling of the surface.
"How can he be sure that this is our quarry?"
Kurtz demanded of Hoffel as he came up.
"It could be anything, a herd of quagga or eland."
Trier answered this objection with a rapid fire of denials, and Hoffel spoke for him.
"Trier says that this is a sacred place. No wild animal ever passes through here."
"I don't believe that," Kurtz scoffed. "How would an animal know?"
"If you cannot feel the magic here, your eyes are blind and your ears are deaf indeed," Trier told him.
But he went to the nearest wall of the passage and peered minutely at it. Then he began to pick things off the rock, the way a baboon picks nits from a companion's scalp. He gathered whatever it was in the palm of his hand, then came back to Kurtz. Between forefinger and thumb he offered him something. Kurtz had to look closely to see that it was a hair.
"Behold, with your pale and disgusting eyes, O eater of dung," he said.
So Kurtz could not understand.
"This white hair came from the shoulder of the gelding Frost, this brown and silky one from True Heart when she touched the rock, and this yellow one from Lemon. This dark one is from Samoya's horse Drumfire," he hooted scornfully. "And now do you believe that Trier is the mightiest hunter of all this sand, and that he has worked a great and solemn magic and revealed the spoor to you?"
"Tell the little fellow ape to stop chattering and take us after them," Kurtz tried unsuccessfully to disguise his elation.